Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Osman! Gol del Celta! Agónico, heroico, sufrimiento para el Barça. Es la gloria en el descuento para el Celta. Lo marca el hijo pródigo. Lo marca Iago Aspas. Lo marca el príncipe de las bateas.
Hello and welcome. We are a third of the way through the season in La Liga, and this weekend was perhaps the most exciting yet. I'm here, Matt Clark, with Rory Barlow. How are you, Rory?
Exciting for some, Matt. I don't know why I invest time and emotion in football, because it doesn't pay off. No, it was a brilliant weekend and some brilliant games. And if you weren't a Barcelona fan, it was full of some fantastic moments.
Absolutely. Well, we'll get onto those in due course. Let's quickly run through the results and some of the main talking points from the weekend then. Friday, we kicked off at San Mamés and Cadiz were victorious. Alvaro Cervera's side got a much-needed win to spoil the 200th game at San Mamés, with a repeat of the result from last season. After the game, Marcelino and Iñaki Williams were both very angry and apologised to the supporters. And then on Saturday, we had Espanyol beating Granada 2-0 at home, who have now taken more points at the RCD Stadium than they did in the whole of the 1920 season, when, of course, they went down. A stunning goal from Adrià Pedrosa, and another goal from Raúl de Tomás, and another standout performance from goalkeeper Diego López, now 40 years old, that got Espanyol over the line. RDT has now scored in his last 5 Espanyol appearances and in his last 6 at home, and he was rewarded with that by a call from Spain after the injury to Ansu Fati. Saturday continued with an absolute humdinger at Balaidos, which we will get into in more depth very shortly. An incredible game, Barca into a 3-0 lead, injuries to Ansu Fati, Nico and Eric Garcia, and they then capitulated in the second half. They haven't won any of their first 5 away league games this season. That hasn't happened since 1986-87 with El Teo, Terry Venables, on the bench. Saturday continued with Alaves coming from behind to beat Levante, and Joselu, who else, was the man to inspire it. Levante have now gone 21 matches without a win in the league. Alaves, on the other hand, they are flying 10 points from 12. Javier Pereira is the first Levante coach to fail to win any of his first 5 league matches. Saturday night ended at the Bernabeu. Real Madrid got a 2-1 win over Rayo Vallecano. They were cruising from goals from Toni Kroos and Karim Benzema. But then Rayo made it interesting. Radamel Falcao came off the bench, scored, then unfortunately had to go off again. But in the dying seconds, Rayo thought they got an equaliser, but some kind of last-ditch defending from Real Madrid preserved the win. Sunday then, and even more dramatic matches. Villarreal, not at their best, but they got the only thing that mattered, a 1-0 victory over Getafe. Emery stays, and they take all 3 points at La Salamica. Then on to Mestalla, and if you think Celta-Barça was crazy, well, hold my beer. Valencia 3, Atleti 3, simply bonkers. When Valencia scored a couple of goals against Mallorca in stoppage time last month, that was the first time a side had come from 2 goals down in stoppage time in 18 years. And it's happened again just 15 days later and at the same stadium for the same team. That data from Mr. Chip, that's just simply incredible. Atleti as well, they've now conceded 12 games, they've conceded more goals in La Liga than in any other season under Cholo Simeone. And that's 19 goals conceded in 16 matches this season, 12 in the last six. Problems for Cholo. Then two matches kicking off in the evening on Sunday. Mallorca 2, Elche 2 was also very entertaining. Lucas Boye was gifted the opening goal. Salva Sevilla equalised from the spot. Boye then put Elche back in front, but a late equaliser from Paulo Maffeo meant the spoils were shared. And as for the new league leaders, once again, the Real Sociedad went back to the top of the table with a hard-fought win at El Sadar. Former Osasuna youth player Mikel Merino with a deflected opener before Adnan Januzaj secured the win from the spot. 17 of Real Sociedad's 19 goals this season have come in the second half of matches. And then, of course, the partidazo of the weekend that we thought it was going to be, at least, El Gran Derby at the Benito Villamarín. It finished 2-0 to Sevilla. The red card to Guido Rodriguez conditioned the game in truth, and Marcos Acuña opened the scoring with a golazo after a sequence of 13 passes, and then an own goal from Héctor Bellerín sentenced the game. We're going to hear more about that from Gregor Chapelle in part two. So after all of that, Rory, it's time to get in depth with Celta Barça, and from Balaidos, we'll hand over to you, who spoke to Ian Morris from Celta USA.
Hoy Ter Stegen.
Gol de Celta. Dentro del área la pone de zurda, balón para Nolito.
And they are looking now for the equaliser. This is Aspas! Absolutely incredible!
I'm joined here by Ian Morris of Celta USA after a crazy game, another crazy game at Balaidos between Barcelona and Celta. How are you doing, Ian, first of all?
Yeah, quite an emotional roller coaster yesterday. You know, I wanted to turn the game off after that first half where, you know, it looked like things just weren't going to go our way. But, you know, glad I stuck around for the second half. Saw Celta really turn the corner and dominate a Barcelona team that, of course, isn't doing well at all. But I think it was an important 45 minutes of football that really looked more like the Celta that we were used to seeing under Eduardo Coudet last season. So definitely looks like something we can grow from, and hopefully that momentum carries over after the international break.
And delight sort of at the end there. Where exactly does this rank in the sort of great, entertaining Celta-Barça and Balaidos games?
There have been so many ever since Celta came back from the second division back in 2012. You know, it's hard to top the 4-1 kind of shocking Celta win over that MSN Luis Enrique coached Barcelona team back in 2015. You know, there have been a lot of exciting games. 4-3 win comes to mind the year after that as well. But, you know, in terms of absolutes, shocking ending and really just things completely turning in the second half, I don't think there's a more surprising result all things considered than yesterday's how things ended up yesterday.
Certainly, yeah, I 100% agree with your assessment of that. Just moving on to sort of Celta more generally, this was obviously a good point to pick up after a less than auspicious start to the season with slightly disappointing start, but they are starting to pick up a little bit more. Do you think that this is sort of, I mean, we obviously saw Chacho come in at the sort of a couple months into last season and nearly get them into Europe. Do you think that's possible again, that they could go that far, or are you setting your expectations a little lower this season?
I'm definitely not expecting a run towards Europe this year. In my opinion, there are just so many quality deep teams. You know, you look at Betis, you look at Villarreal, you look at Osasuna, teams that I think are really Better position than Celta. They have squad depth. They got off to a better start to the year. My personal expectations, well, hopes more than expectations, are that, you know, this team can kind of get a streak going, can comfortably establish themselves in the middle of the table, and obviously kind of brush aside those relegation fears that we've dealt with so often over the past couple or few seasons, really. You know, there's been a lot of talk in Vigo about possibly going on a Copa del Rey run. You know, if you get the team kind of solidified mid-table and shoot towards that, you know, it's the elephant in the room for Celta fans. We've never won a title before outside of the 2000 Intertoto trophy, which debatably counts as a title. And Chacho Codet's mission ever since he came to Celta has been... And, you know, he stated it publicly, finally finding that trophy. So, you know, what I'm kind of hoping for is a mid-table finish where we don't have to worry too much about relegation and maybe look to make some moves in the Copa del Rey this season.
And one way or another, Iago Aspas is going to be key in terms of whatever Celta achieve. I mean, he hasn't had, perhaps, again, the most auspicious start. And we're used to Aspas being sort of the star player for Celta, really dragging them out of situations. Is it... I hate to ask this question because we all love Iago Aspas, but is this the start of a decline or is it just a dip in your view? You obviously watch him very closely.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Iago Aspas, for my money, is the best player in club history. Continues to have a lot of quality. But let's be honest, he's 34 years old. He's played a lot of minutes ever since coming back from Liverpool, or from, Liverpool, and then a loan at Sevilla. And, you know, he's not going to last forever. Eduardo Cudet actually started him on the bench in Celta's draw at Rayo Vallecano on Monday. I think we might see more of this in the future, kind of choosing when is the best time to, you know, maybe get him a little bit of rest. But, you know, seeing that he did get some rest on Monday and what he did yesterday where he looked like vintage Iago Aspas, maybe that's the solution. You know, to me, it doesn't seem as much like a physical thing as it does perhaps just he wasn't kind of feeling things at the beginning of the season. You know, I think physically he's still got plenty of quickness. He's still really nice on the ball, and that left foot is magic. But he just looked kind of out of rhythm at the beginning of the season. And hopefully this game serves as a turning point for him, and hopefully Celta's able to kind of manage his minutes and not work him to the point of exhaustion so that he can continue to contribute. I still think he's our team's most talented player. Mm-hmm. He's the key to our attack, especially now with Santi Mina out, although hopefully we'll be looking to get him back after the international break. He's still a key player for us. It's just going to be a matter of managing his minutes and, you know, continuing to hope that his body holds up and he can continue to be a key contributor, which I expect him to be this season.
Yeah, as I say, I speak for everyone when I say I hope Iago Aspas can sort of find that sort of peak form that he's found over so many seasons lately. It's remarkable the importance he has to Celta. But I will wrap things up and let you get back to your Sunday afternoon, Ian, because it's been a pleasure speaking to you, but you're a man in demand and I don't want to take that away from you. So I'll thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me on. It's a pleasure as always.
Cheers, and back to you, Matt.
Thanks very much, Rory and Ian. And we'll hear more from him as the season continues, I'm sure. So, Rory, we've heard the Celta perspective. Xavi's in the door now. He's landed in Barcelona. He'll be presented on Monday. But this game... with Sergio Bajuan's last. From a Barca perspective, what did you make of it?
It looked like sort of the wave of optimism had really come back to Barcelona with Xavi coming in. And that first half was fantastic. But to sum this game up, it was the good, then the bad, and then the downright ugly from Barcelona. I don't know what more we learned from this game about Barcelona, so to speak. I think it was more or less what we've seen from this side, just to sort of the nth degree, and so to speak. They were really good in this first half, I have to say. They spread the play very well. They were quite vertical, but that helped them, and they managed to sort of play through Celta very well. Sergio Busquets managing to get on the score sheet for the first time in a couple of years. Memphis Depay got an important goal for him, because I think he's been slightly lacking in recent weeks. And Ansu Fati, again, coming up with the goods inside the box. Just, it all went wrong. As soon as Ansu Fati went down, and you felt the misery just kind of returning to Barcelona. And I think, to be honest, although Ansu Fati going off is perhaps the headline news and really, really damaging injury for him, just in terms mentally coming back, I think Nico was the really big miss. When he went off, I thought Barcelona lost a lot of control. They lost a lot of power in midfield and ability to sort of hold off Celta. And in that second half, you just saw that they weren't able to put their foot on the ball. They lost all sorts of control. And Frenkie de Jong, who is part of the solution and part of the problem, said that they had no personality. And to be honest, it was him that didn't close Iago Aspas down properly in the last minute when they conceded.
Yeah, the injuries are just piling up for Barca, and you know, there's been much talk this weekend about the medical personnel and whether that needs to be changed. But in terms of the playing staff itself, the reality is that, you know, the money isn't necessarily there to invest big time in January. So what they have is what they will fight with for the rest of the season. Of course, Xavi comes in. His first game will be the derby at Camp Nou against Espanyol. And then soon after that is the absolute crucial game against Benfica. So I think you tweeted this weekend that everyone compares this to the Pep Guardiola and even the Koeman arrival, about kind of very tough circumstances in which to start. And you asked the question that, is this perhaps even tougher for Xavi?
Yeah, I mean, on the face of it, okay, Koeman was coming off a catastrophic defeat and the presidential issues there. Luis Suarez leaving, there was a clear sense of regeneration, but this really is being thrown into the sort of boiling cauldron, because two results go badly for Xavi, and although he's Xavi, he will get given time, and I don't think he'll be in danger, but the pressure will be right up as soon as those results don't go his way. I think for Barcelona, yeah, you've mentioned the medical staff, they were very señalado, signalled or kind of called out, even by Sergi Barjuan himself. And that kind of shows the degree to which physical preparation is really hurting Barcelona, because not only are they losing players, they're conceding late goals. That goal against them again, coming back to that, poor closing down. They just couldn't run with Celta for the second half. And yeah, it's part of a sort of systemic culture of failing to meet the standards. And I think that is what Xavi has to come in and impose his standards again. But yeah, this was just a painful game that sort of exhibited Barcelona's weaknesses in terms of all throughout the club, all throughout the sort of playing staff, the coaching staff, and indeed in this case, the medical staff.
Yeah, lots for Xavi to work on. And of course, at the end of the match day, Barcelona are now, in points terms at least, as close to Getafe in 20th as they are the Real Sociedad in first. Moving on to Mestalla and the same scoreline and similar circumstances, an absolutely dramatic end to this game. As we said in the introduction there, Valencia, they stole two goals against Mallorca a couple of weeks ago to get a 2-2 draw. This time they were 3-1 down to Cholo Simeone's Atleti. You think that's game over, but incredibly, Hugo Duro comes on, scores twice, and Valencia take another point. Rory, you saw this game. What did you think overall, and just in, especially in terms of Atleti's kind of defensive issues, what's your take?
Yeah, I think, again, trying to look at this from a point of view of what did we learn, because I mentioned that this was the worst Simeone defence that I've seen. I think it was last week, again, we were talking before about the weeks really blurring into one these days, and the match days too. But yeah, this is the worst Simeone defence, and I think the worrying thing for Atleti is that I don't necessarily think it's a system problem. I don't think it's in terms of their style or the sort of the way that they're trying to play. it's the players themselves that aren't doing their jobs. They aren't winning their battles. You look at the set piece. That's simple marking. Cholo, 5 years ago, it would be unthinkable to think of that, them conceding that goal. And yeah, just the ease with which they're conceding goals. I think a lot of it is due to players losing their battles. Jimenez, quality central defender on his day, really up there with the best in the world. He's big, he's strong, he's fast, he's quick, but he doesn't seem to quite have that edge at the minute. Savage the same. They're not winning their battles, and so it's hard to know how you sort of solve that immediately. I mean, is it just poor form? No. How do you cover the defence more? You can't add another centre half in. You've only got so many, and you're already playing free. So how to cover those issues? I think it's been a welcome sort of improvement in attack going forward in the goals. But like Carla Fernandez mentioned, it's all very well scoring three goals, but if you're conceding three as well, it doesn't really matter about improving an attack. And Cholo has significant work to do here, and you have to have faith in him doing it, because, I mean, look at his track record. But it's certainly concerning, and right now it doesn't seem like there's a quick, easy fix to this.
Yes, Atleti surrendering more goals and more points at Mestalla. Well, that's the end of part one. Stick with us, because we're going to round up El Gran Derby with Gregor Chapelle, and we'll cover all the rest of the action and get our MVP picks and our moments of the week before we head into the international break. So stick with us. We'll be back soon.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to La Liga Lowdown. I'm here with Rory Barlow, and we are recapping Matchday 13 in La Liga, which was a phenomenal weekend. And the final game of that weekend was El Gran Derby, one of the most incredible derbies in world football, I think it's fair to say. Benito Villamarín was in fine voice before the game. Full-time, though, wasn't quite the same story, as Sevilla came there and won 2-0. So now we're going to get some reaction with Sevilla fan Gregor Chapelle. Rory, take it away.
Insiste el Sevilla, Jordán por dentro para Rakiti, apertura banda izquierda para Ocampos, que es una pesadilla, Ocampos atrás para Acuña, Acuña que le pega, ¡qué golazo! ¡Gol, gol, 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 gol,
dentro,
gol, 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 gol,
por dentro,
gol, gol, del Sevilla en el Gran Derby.
And I'm joined by Gregor Chapelle after another Derby Sevillano, which has taken by Sevilla the sixth. They've won, I think, five out of their last six. It was 2-0, greatly conditioned by the red card to Guido Rodriguez. First of all, Gregor, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm not too bad. I'm quite happy with that result. Like you said, it's been a few games now where Betis haven't had a result over Sevilla. So, yeah, it's after the week Sevilla had, it's a nice little tonic for the poor result against Leo in the midweek there. So, happy days.
It definitely sort of lifts the pressure, I think, for Lopetegui, who, as you say, has definitely got bragging rights over Betis. Bellerin, with an own goal late on, kind of sealed the match after an excellent Marcos Acuña goal. What did you... I don't know if you had any strong opinions on the match. It felt fairly straightforward for me. And, yeah, like you said, coming off the back of that Leo result, what does this mean for Sevilla?
I mean, yeah, I'd say first half, it was a typical kind of derby game, quite kind of cagey, not a lot created in the first 40 minutes or so. And then it kind of came to life, and then I'd say the sending off made a big difference. In that second half, Sevilla kind of really got more of a foothold in it. They controlled the game, they were kind of in charge. I kind of almost felt that Betis didn't at times believe that they could, especially when they went 1-0 down, turn it around. Because if they couldn't do it first half with 11, it's a daunting task with 10. And you know, you always think maybe the historical results as well play a big part in that. It, you know, like, if they've not had a win for so long, that's in the back of your mind as well. But no, I think it's a massive result, especially for Lopetegui after the first four games in the Champions League without a win, only scoring 3 goals. It was really important to kind of get back to winning ways tonight, and especially in the biggest game of the season. Or, well, one of the two biggest games of the season against our biggest rivals. So yeah, it was the kind of, like I said, the perfect tonic for it.
Definitely, and I'm not going to lie, I've been slightly underwhelmed by Sevilla this year after an excellent season last year. What have you kind of made of them so far? Because they did make some good signings. They brought in Lamela, they brought in Rafa Mir, brought in a bit more depth with Montiel and Agustinsson, Delaney, there's quite a few there. What have you made of them this season and their kind of slightly shaky form, I'll say?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. You'd be hoping that they would have kicked on from last year. Like, I thought they could have had a little late push on for the league last season, and it hasn't really... I mean, they've done well at home. They've won all their games at home, but away from home, they've been a little bit unconvincing. And in Europe especially as well, like, kings of the Europa League, but just the complete opposite in the Champions League. It's upsetting, but... You know, you're hoping a big sometimes a team just needs like a big result to just make them kick on a little bit, because I think this year, I think a lot of us can see this, La Liga's not a foregone conclusion by any means. Okay, Madrid or Atletico might be favourites, Barcelona having their problems, but I feel like this could be the, like, I always thought this from the start of the season, this could be a season where a team like Sevilla, this is the best chance they could have for years and years and years to really have a title push. So I'm hoping that this starts to click now a little bit more after tonight's result.
Yeah, I think I'd probably agree with you there. Obviously, Atleti and Real are favourites, but Sevilla, until that sort of Real Madrid game, which they drew 2-0 sort of towards the end of last season, if they'd won that, they would have been right in with a shout.
Yeah.
Just kind of straight up, do you think they can win it? Do they have the pieces there to do it?
I mean, I don't want to say something and then looks ridiculous at the end of the season, but I'm going to say yes. why not? Stranger things have happened. I mean, like you said, yeah, like last year, they did look like they were going to do it, and then towards the end just kind of petered out, ended up finishing fourth place. But this season, you know, Atletico have got their defensive problems. Real Madrid have done well at times, but are prone to dropping points, and Barcelona have got their own little situation that's a little bit complicated as well. So, yeah, why not? Why can't they do it? They've got a group of players there. A lot of them have been together for a while. They know each other well, and they've got quite a good group, I think. So I don't see why they can't just push on.
Definitely, and they are only a point off top now. Real Sociedad leading the league. I think... Like you say, Sevilla do know how to grind out a result, and there's definitely more to come from them. And so if they do manage to find that, then I think they're in with a chance. I will probably just wrap it up and throw it back to Matt now, just because I'm conscious that I'm taking minutes and hours of sleep away from Gregor, but I'll thank you very much for your time.
No problem.
And yeah, back to you, Matt.
Thank you.
Many thanks to Rory and Gregor. Julian Lopetegui continuing his domination of this match. That's his fifth Grand Derby. He's won four of them and drawn the other. Simply remarkable. Well, now it's time to recap the rest of the weekend's action. And we'll start with Friday night. Rory, you were very impressed with Cardiff, weren't you?
Yeah, Cardiff. I actually think this seems to be happening to a few teams that their home record is actually worse than their away record. And I think Cardiff seem to be getting the balance a little bit better away from home, where they seem to be able to sort of come out, attack for 20-30 minutes, try and get a goal, and then sort of maybe retreat a little bit, drop a little deeper, and become the sort of familiar Cardiff we've seen. And they got that balance exactly right. They did just enough to win. They got their goal. It helps that they're playing against a somewhat blunt Athletic, but Cervera at his best, getting a result where perhaps they shouldn't have, or it didn't seem likely, and a huge, huge win for them, which really stops the slide there.
Yeah, it's only their second win of the season, only Athletic's second defeat too. And as we could see from the reaction, they were pretty underwhelming and they knew it. Espanyol then, as we mentioned, a fantastic opening goal from Adria Pedrosa and that RDT header. Rory, Espanyol are flying at home.
Yeah, it has to be said, the RCD stadium in Cornella is definitely a fortress at the minute. And yeah, this is just all about that goal. Like, that is as sweet a strike as you will find. And brilliant set piece. It's rare you actually see that come off. It's reassuring to know that they do actually sometimes come off. And brilliant, brilliant goal. Has to be said, I think Espanyol were maybe a little slower starting than we gave them, or than I thought they would be. But they seem to really be coming into their own.
Level on points with their cross-city rivals, with the derby to come after the international break. Nothing like a juicy bit of narrative there. Back in the Basque Country, Joselu once again inspired Alaves, didn't he? Where would they be without him? And where will Levante be come the end of the season?
Well, where would they be, where would Alaves be without Javi Calleja? I actually want to give Alaves a little bit of credit, because they did go through managers last season and don't think it's the best policy to do so, but fair enough to Javi Calleja, they gave him sort of a bit of trust, they gave him a bit of rope, and he's started pulling them out of the mire. They're flying now, and I think he's just demonstrating he's a really good manager. I mean, based off the evidence that we've seen, okay, Villarreal, some would say that he underachieved with them, but for me, did a really good job with that, the exception of that one run that got him sacked the first time. And then Alaves, back from the dead again, sort of towards the end of last season, and now he seems to be doing it again with a team which, to be honest, I'm not sure has the quality that others do in this league. Levante, it's looking worrying for them, I have to say. Apart from the Atleti game, and as we know, Levante always turn up against Atleti at the moment, I've seen very little to suggest that there is a marked difference between what we saw under Paco Lopez and Javi Pereira.
Yeah, we asked Paco in our WhatsApp group whether Levante would even kind of consider changing coaches once again in the international break, and he said it was pretty unlikely, but you never know, do you? You never know. If relegation is looking like an increasing prospect, clubs can push that panic button repeatedly. Well, Real Madrid, 2-1 winners over Rayo. We've mentioned that they were cruising and then they made it difficult for themselves. You thought Rayo probably could have got back into this in the end.
Yeah, this was typical Ancelotti ball, to coin a phrase. Really good for sort of about 60-70 minutes, attack absolutely flowing. I mentioned that I think he's the most sort of, I mean, being an Italian manager, the stereotype is that you're defensively solid and you're sort of very strong at the back. Carlo's the absolute opposite of that. It's about freedom of expression. It's about the attacking players being given license to do what they do best. And that worked and looked really good for 70 minutes. And then that's the thing with Ancelotti's sides, is they always give you a chance. And we'll find out whether it will be enough to sort of get them home over the course of the league season. But Rayo, for me, should have got a point here. They hit the post late on. They had that really, really sort of just get like a good contact on it at the corner. I can't remember who it is, if it's Savojevic or Catena, Comesaña maybe. You'll remind me, Matt, probably. But on the sort of goal line, and Real Madrid get away with it, but really by the skin of their teeth.
Yeah, once again, Iraola's side proving themselves worthy of a place in the top half of La Liga, which is where they still are. Villarreal, Emery, the news this week was that he was going to go. Newcastle were calling. Tonight, Emery, as we said. But not to be. He decided to stay. And despite rumours that they might have even sacked him after the poor run of form, he then wins in the Champions League. And then he wins again in La Liga today, on Sunday. And some injuries, though, that must be a concern ahead of, well, the international break might be a good time for them. But yeah, Danjuma and then Yeremy both coming off injured.
Yeah, they've been the floating devices for Villarreal this season. They've really kept them sort of just about doing well enough. And yeah, well, they're not doing well enough in the league, but they are doing okay in the Champions League. And without those two, you have to worry if I don't know what the latest news is with Gerard Moreno, but I mean, he's obviously not fully fit and hasn't sort of really got back up to speed. Paco Alcacer, it really seems clear to me that Emery doesn't trust him anymore. Yeremy Pino came on ahead of him in a sort of false nine role, I believe, in midweek. That's not a good sign. Boulaye Dia. Yeah, okay, gives you a few options, but again, doesn't seem to have the full trust of Emery. So up front, it's looking a bit bare, it has to be said, for a team that initially starting the season, I would have said, was flush for options. Because, yeah, none of that kind of strike force is really in form apart from Yeremy Pino and Danjuma, and without them, it remains to be seen. They get the result against Getafe, which I think was very important for Emery to go back to La Cerámica, get a result in front of his fans again and just sort of calm things down after a turbulent week. But yeah, I think there's work ahead for Emery, work ahead for Villarreal to sort of get back on the straight and narrow.
Our friends at Villarreal USA saying that as soon as they seem to take a couple of steps forward, there is either an injury or another setback which seems to set them back a couple of steps too. So a very inconsistent time for the Yellow Submarine. Similarly inconsistent, Mallorca-Elche, an interesting game, ebb and flow in the encounter. Mallorca behind, level, behind again, saved the point. This time, finally some joy for them in the added time. They've been guilty of dropping points later on in recent weeks. Of course, that Valencia game is the one that everyone remembers. But this time, they were the ones that got the point in added time. But you want some praise for Elche's Argentinian forward.
Yeah, Lucas Boyer, what a player he looks. He has been phenomenal for them. And probably one of the better pickups. And I mean, he came on loan and then was signed permanently. All the big fanfare was around Javier Pastore, but he is without doubt their best player and their shining light at the minute. And it's one of those that if you're a fan of Elche, I'm sure Keith will probably think the same. It's a where would we be without him kind of thing. And yeah, absolutely crucial to them.
Yeah, I think very comparable with Hossolu in terms of his importance to the team. And if you're a club down the bottom there fighting relegation, if you have a forward that scores goals, you've got more than half a chance, haven't you? So, yeah, encouraging signs, I think, for both sides, really, in this game. Some mistakes, but also some bright spots. So back to our leaders then. La Real, 2-0 winners at El Sadar. Another professional performance, another clean sheet, another win. Still unbeaten since the opening day. Rory, how impressive are they?
They're fantastic. Given the struggles that other teams are going through and the injury lists that other teams have suffered, and you look how damaging that's been to them, you look at La Real, for them still to be top is just sensational. And I think if I can delve into sort of a trope or something, there's often a dismissal of possession in the opponent's half, and maybe it not creating loads and loads of chances, perhaps people don't seem to see this as important or useful. And I understand that argument, but this victory for me just comes from La Real being ambitious and playing in the right areas. The goal is, it comes from nothing. I mean, they work the space well, and that's something that they have been doing well. And Marino takes a shot, big deflection into the goal. And that comes from playing in the right areas, from being ambitious, from sort of trying to dominate the game. Whereas if you're sort of maybe less ambitious and you're not trying to go forward so much, you don't get that piece of luck, because these were two very evenly matched teams on the day for me. And Osasuna were a wee bit unlucky to go behind, but La Real get another victory, Mikel Merino right at the heart of it, and they are flying.
They are. It's a really fascinating season, and with Sevilla winning El Gran Derby, they are both right up the top with Real Madrid in contention. Real Sociedad 1 point clear, and Real Madrid and Sevilla, as you say, 1 point behind, level on points. Well then, Rory, it's now time for our MVP picks of the weekend. And there was a lot of contenders this week. We've already mentioned Lucas Boyer and a couple of others. We mentioned, the Argentinians in the Sevilla game. Acuña, Ocampos, Montiel, all very impressive. But we've picked four, and your first pick is one from Friday night. Take it away.
Pacha Propaganda is back, and in a big way. A really big way. 17 ball recoveries, I think I saw online, which is just a crazy stat. It really goes to the sort of motoring style of him, and he's just a force of nature down that left-hand side. Gareth are so lucky to have him, because, I mean, fullbacks have become vastly more important in recent years, but not in quite the way that Pacha Espino does it. I mean, he provides, and he's good going forward, he's good defensively, but it's not because he's controlling the game from left back. He is just an absolute terror for anyone playing against him. And he demonstrated that once again on Friday night, and was one of the main reasons that they got back to winning ways.
Absolutely. And at one point, he outran Iñaki Williams. And I think my jaw was on the floor for a good few seconds after that. Just sensational performance from him. And as you say, integral to this Cadiz side. Speaking of integral, we spoke about this with Ian Morris. Iago Aspas, he returned to the starting lineup, captain of Celta, the talisman, 3-0 down at halftime. You're thinking, okay, you know, it's Barca, this can happen. But no, he led the charge to get back into the game, first of all, and then kind of dragging them through those second half moments, forcing them forward, G-ing them on, and then the equalising goal is, well, we've heard the commentary clips, it's just incredible. A perfect, I know you don't want to talk about this anymore, and I'm sorry, but
again,
the finish, the kind of the ambition to, it's the perfect finish, isn't it? It's a curled finish from the edge of the box, right into the corner, beyond Ter Stegen. And yeah, the celebrations were just fantastic as well, which to me makes him a very worthy nomination for MVP. Similar kind of heroics from a talismanic figure you've gone for from Alaves.
Yes, I will eventually forgive you for making me relive that moment for the third time on this podcast. But yeah, heroics, last minute, Hossolu, we did mention him earlier. He really put the thump in a thumping header to win the game for them. And I mean, I talked about Calleja and his effect. The smile that Hossolu sort of lets loose at the end of that, I think for me, really, I mean, he was always playing and playing relatively well. We saw that assist that I mentioned the other week against Barcelona. But that smile was, for me, that Hossolu is back. He's invested. This is his team. He is the sort of transcendental figure of this team. And back again, sort of winning them points. There is no sort of figure like him in this Alaves team. He's so important to them, and he came up almost single-handedly winning them the game there.
Yeah, incredible performance once again from their main man up front. To round off these picks then, it's probably only fair that I include a Valencia player, and what a cameo from Hugo Duro. He comes on in the 85th minute. He scores to get them back in the game, 92. Hell of a finish, that one. The second, his first goal. And then the header from the set piece, we've mentioned Adetti's defending, but, you know, in terms of attacking the space, attacking the ball, getting the power on it to beat Oblak, fantastic. And, you know, all the jokes from his time at Getafe in the cup semi-final, you know, Valencia fans kind of already had the shirts with Toke and Hugo Duro. Well, now he's become a bit of a cult favourite for scoring them goals, you know, in their shirt. So for me, he's got to be up there. Probably the smallest cameo of the season in terms of an MVP candidate, but I think he did more than enough to warrant a slot. So yeah, for me, he's my other pick. As for moments of the weekend, once again, there was so many to pick from. We could have had left-footed goals alone. We had Antoine Griezmann, fantastic goal. Acuña in El Gran Derby. Adria Pedrosa as well in the Espanyol game. But for me, and this has become a bit of a thing for me in recent weeks, RDT scoring once again, fantastic header, and then getting the call up for Spain. That makes him my moment of the weekend.
Cuidado al balón, roll de Tomás! Toma Lucho! Toma Lucho! Apunta Lucho! Gol!
¡Qué tío!
¡Del Español! RDT Raúl de Tomás!
Siete.
But yeah, you've gone for Hugo Duro, haven't you?
Yeah, I'm going for your MVP candidate. There are a few finer sights in football than seeing Mestalla erupt. It's something that we've been robbed of via the pandemic and via some terrible management decisions from up above. But yeah, what a moment to see them get that last minute equaliser. And I mean, it's one of the greatest things in football is the last minute goal to either get your team a result or win the match. And Toko and Hugo Duro, he does it again. You've got to give it credit. Got to give him credit. I think he's more, in many people's minds, a sort of hard-working striker who does a job as opposed to being an out-and-out goal scorer. But he's done it again, and he's come up massive for Bordelas.
An incredible goal, an incredible finish, and an incredible weekend. And I hope you've enjoyed this podcast. We've come to the end. Stick with us on La Liga Lowdown on Twitter for all the coverage of the international break. Spain have two very important qualifiers to see if they can make the World Cup automatically or if they will face a daunting playoff. Stick with us on Twitter for that. Check out our website for new content dropping as well. My thanks go to Rory for being with me tonight, and to Ian from Celta USA and Gregor, and of course to all of you listening. We started the show with Aspas, so it's only fitting that we will finish it with Hugo Duro. The 2-3-3 matches this weekend. Incredible circumstances that bookmarked this podcast. Thank you for listening. Enjoy the international break. We'll be back soon. Bye-bye.
No se embache, la va a pinchar Guedes, la va a pinchar Guedes. Guedes que la pincha, el rebote.
¡Gol! ¡Gol!
¡Gol, gol, 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 gol!
¡Duro!
¡Gol, gol, 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 gol!
¡Vamos! ¡Duro!
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.